really?
I should try that.
We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. The hour of 10:15 having arrived. We will take care of some administrative issues once we have a quorum. We do not, as of this time, have a quorum. What I'm looking at today is we have a full agenda here. We have two bills from yesterday. We'll be finishing up on the Hornstein bill today. The way we left it yesterday, I have Representative Leshen Knuth can ask questions of Ms. Schaubach or Thorson if you have those questions. Otherwise, if not, we will go directly to the folks who wish to testify with concerns. Representative Leshen, do you have a question for Ms. Schaubach?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Schaubach, if you could please join us. And is Mr. Thorson here? And so this is where we're back, members. We're back on the Hornstein bill, House File 655 or 665?
665.
So, members, we have the House File 665 before us. And Representative Hornstein, welcome back to the Tax Committee. And we're happy to have today with us Ms. Schaubach and Mr. Thorson. And I have two questions. And then if there's no more, we will go to the folks that have concerns about the bill. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schaubach, this is kind of a complicated area of tax law that's tough for me to follow, and I think it's tough for some of my constituents to follow, but I know my constituents are smart enough to know an opportunity when they see it. So I'm sure they're going to want to know how they can get in on this action. So, for example, say they're working on contract, a hanging drywall or something. Can my constituent form an LLC in Grand Cayman and have the check sent there and then pay his rent out of that account? And how exactly does he go about doing that? And how much in taxes, say, would he be able to avoid by doing that? Just give me a quick primer on the steps that he needs to do to make sure that happens.
Ms. Schaubach, I believe it would be, this is just applies to C-Corps, I believe, so it wouldn't be an LLC or a subchapter
Okay, form a C-Corp. Yeah. How much would it cost for him to form a C-Corp?
Ms. Schaubach.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, you know, I am not sure, but if you Google tax havens, which, again, is kind of ironic when you Google tax havens, but they have numerous high-paid attorneys that can figure that out for you and set these up over the internet. But I don't know, I wouldn't know how much money you could actually save.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair,
hide.
Here's the problem, Ms. Schaubach. My guy's hanging drywall, so he can't afford a high-paid attorney. He's really looking for a free way that he can set this up where he can avoid the taxation. Is there a way to do that?
Ms. Schaubach?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, I do not know. I do not know.
Okay.
Representative
a freeway? I don't know if there's...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, can you address that? How does my constituent get in on this action?
Okay, before we do that, we have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Carlson moves the minutes of March 8th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Members, we're picking up where we went from yesterday. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this bill. Yet today we have a lot of bills that we need to work on here, but we will give the other side as much time as the proponents have had. And members, if I could, and we'll hear more about this on the House floor this afternoon, but many of you have received the email from Al Mathewitz that informs us that our former chief clerk, Ed Burdick, has passed away. He was the chief clerk for 38 years. He was an employee of the House of Representatives for 62 years. And so we will join on the House floor for a moment of silence for Mr. Burdick, who most all of us know and respected and loved. So that's a sad note, but I wanted members to be aware of it. Representative Hornstein, to the Lesh question.
Thank
please,
you, Mr.
Sir.
Chair, and that's very sad news indeed. Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, you know, I would answer that question by simply saying I don't believe your constituent could take advantage of this particular subsidy or spending program that the state has on behalf of some of these larger corporations. It's just a small number of fairly large corporations that are benefiting from this anachronistic 1980s law. And so I think there's very, very limited pathways, very limited freeways for your constituent to be able to lower his or her taxes as a result of this.
Representative Lesh?
Okay, thanks. I wonder, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Michael might be able to address an avenue by which my constituent might be able to take advantage of this.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, I'd have to agree with Representative Hornstein that basically in order to make use of the current version of the FOC law, you really have to be a multinational corporation that has some sorts of legitimate foreign operations. It's possible under the pre-2005 version of the FOC that someone could, with purely domestic operations, in fact benefit from it, but those the changes that were enacted in 2005 and 2008 basically have foreclosed that. But if you look at the, you know, there was a recent Minnesota Supreme Court case involving the Rochester Financial Institution that had, you know, no real foreign operations but got the benefit of that. But the changes that were enacted in 05 and 08 basically have stopped that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Michael.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Knuth, and then if it's okay, we'll go to the proponents or the people with concerns. We don't have opponents. We have people with concerns. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my comments are probably sounding a little out of place today since we are at the beginning of a conversation and rather at the end. And, you know, I just, one of the things I take most seriously as a legislator is making sure people feel comfortable being a part of this process, and it can be a really scary thing to get up in front of a committee and testify. You know, the committee testifiers we have right now, they may be more used to it and they may be more comfortable with it, but I think we need to make sure that every time someone is up testifying that we treat them with respect and we make sure that their views are heard, even if we disagree vehemently. And yeah, I think it's something that I hold very dear and I think is really important with our democracy, is making sure people feel not just that there's the opportunity there, but that they feel that it's open and that they can be heard. And so I wanted to say that because there was some exchanges that I think were difficult for some of our testifiers, and I think they can handle it. These particular testifiers we have, that's not what I'm questioning at all. But I think there may be people watching who would think, well, I don't know if I want to go up and subject myself to that kind of exchange. And so I just hope members will keep that in mind, that it's not only the testifiers we have, but the whole process and the whole way we do business here that I think can make it more or less difficult for people to make the decision to get up in front of, I mean, and frankly, Ms. Schaubeck said she was always intimidated. A table full of legislators is intimidating, and I think it just is for many people who don't understand how this place works or haven't grown up or gotten to work here or been more involved. So I think we really need to keep that in mind as we develop, or as we debate contentious issues, and that's why my hand was up. And I know Ms. Schaubach forwarded to me an email with the IRS website, which I haven't had printed off, but she was using language that was literally on the IRS website, and I don't know how you get much more. She has a copy of it if members want to see.
I brought
a
copy.
And also, Representative Knuth, for the record, Ms. Schaubach said she was kidding.
I did.
and a couple things, and I will talk privately to Representative Lesh, Paymar, and Rukavin on their comments towards some witnesses and see if they can control themselves a little bit. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to this issue, you know, and you're right, it's even now, when I bring up an issue, scares the bejeekers out of me sitting at that table looking at wise and grizzled veterans of the legislature ready to grill me. But the other thing I think also must be mentioned is that for testifiers who come before a committee using inflammatory language towards legitimate people following the law and using words like tax dodging and scams and, you know, that kind of phraseology really has no place either. Because what you're doing is you're impugning the character of these legitimate businesses who are using the law legitimately. They're not breaking the law. And yet, to have testifiers come and use that kind of inflammatory language is also very inappropriate. So you're right. A little give and take on both sides. Remember, this is a place where reasoned debate should take place. Right? And I've got to teach myself that sometimes as well, I understand. But it is important that this is a two-way street.
Representative Knuth.
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, I think that's fair. And, I think members in both parties are probably guilty of doing this. And I think it's important for us to just police ourselves, and it's going to get, I think, only more difficult from here. I mean, we're just talking about laying over for possible inclusion. We're not actually talking about passing the bills yet, and it's. I think it's just important to remind ourselves again and again of how we do this respectfully, especially in these official committee proceedings. You know, if you're in the media going back and forth is one thing, but when we're officially in committee, I think both, and Mr. Chair, I think both sides have done it and will probably do it, and we need to just make sure we are as respectful as possible.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Schaubach, are you okay?
I'm just fine. Okay. I just wanted to, I think they're panning out the copy of the IRS website, and for Representative Biskins, again, I received, I mean, this is right from the IRS, our federal IRS website. And if you read the last three paragraphs in the conclusion, I know it's very difficult to read. I think you'll...
Ms. Schaubach, if I might, I would just say that members can go to the IRS website if they'd like and check that out.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. But Ms. Schaubach, during the testimony, the words tax dodging was used. Is that on the IRS website as well?
Ms. Schaubach?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, can you repeat that? There's talking over here.
Well, thank you. Ms. Schaubach, during the testimony, and I don't know if it was you or Mr. Thorson, used the phrase tax dodging because I wrote it down. Is that on the IRS website as well?
Ms. Schaubach?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, as I'm looking over this again, I don't think on the IRS, but I do not think I said tax dodging. I can look at my testimony.
Representative Biskins, the other kind of inflammatory word with me was exploitation, and I did get an email from Dane Smith saying that he was not intimidated. He's a professional, and he's fine. I find it ironic that it seems that when the conservative asks one of the other persuasion a question, that's mean, and when a more liberal type person asks a conservative question, that's just fine. But I'm all about peace and love, and I think we can all get along here. Representative Paymar?
Mr. Chair, since I sort of either started this or did something yesterday that set this off, let me just say a couple things, if you don't mind.
You have the floor, sir.
You came to see me after the meeting, and we had a nice chat, and I just want to repeat a couple things I said to you, and I maybe this is my first time on the tax committee. Maybe I should go back to judiciary where I belong and deal with criminals. And
you're welcome.
I just, but I just want to say something, and everyone has their own styles of running meetings, and I enjoyed serving with you many years ago when you chaired Commerce, I think it was, and I was in the minority. I just want to say when the DFL was in the majority and I got to chair a committee, I remember I was coming back with my partner Laura from a trip to Portugal, and I just vowed. I said, if I ever get to chair a committee, I'm going to do things differently, and I'm going to treat people respectfully, and I'm going to be inclusive, and I'm just going to try to do things differently. And I remember, in my committee, if members of my party were even talking, and Representative Biskins, I think, is the only one that sat on that committee, I'd have my CA, and I'd tell them, you tell her to shut up. We're not doing it in my committee. And I just felt like that you know, this is the people's place. People should be able to talk here respectfully. And you know, I don't care if Mr. Dane Smith felt intimidated or not. He's my constituent. He had something to say, and you had the right, Mr. Chair, to ask him questions. You know, there's ways of asking questions, and there's ways of asking questions. And when you carry a gavel in this place or in the Senate, it brings power. And to say that it doesn't is not true. And so I just, one thing I just want to say, I hope you don't mind me saying something that you said to me in
That's
my
fine.
Office. You sure?
I'm an open book.
Okay. Because I do think this is true. And Greg and I were talking in my office, and he says, you know, liberals, you know, I don't understand them. He said. And I thought, you know, there are people here. Sometimes, you know, people say things on the side of the aisle particularly, and I go, I can't believe this person is saying this. But I do think at some point, you know, we're seeing this all over the country. We've got to figure this thing out. We have to be able to talk not just at people and not above people. But we need to hear each other, or this place is gonna blow by the end of May, and maybe I'll be blowing too. But I just wanted to say that I'm sorry I brought this up yesterday. I should have talked to Chair Davids after the meeting about what I thought, but I did, and I did. Thanks.
Representative Paymar, thank you very much, and I would just Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to take this opportunity to disagree with some members around the table. In my mind, this is a committee where all the facts should come out. And if people get hurt feelings by certain words, so be it. I mean, for example, when Representative Rukavina stood up on the floor the other day and said to Representative Downey, I like you. I vehemently disagreed with Representative Rukavina. But I didn't feel a need to bring that up. No, but in seriousness, if I think someone's tax dodging, I'm going to say they're tax dodging. And if people get hurt feelings about that, then so be it, Mr. Chair, because I think this is the kind of committee where that type of information, be it opinion or not, is relevant and will always be relevant for the people.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I would just say that... in my discussions with Representative Paymar, I think this committee, I try to give equal time to both sides. I always ask if anyone wants to testify for, or I won't even say opposition, with concerns. I want to hear both sides, and I feel very strongly that when Representative Loeffler talks sometimes, or Hortman, or my good friend Representative Dabney, when they say some things, or Representative Hornstein, I just don't get it. I just don't understand, and I want to learn more. I want to know more because I want to know what everybody's thinking about so we can put this whole thing together. So with that being said, I see that I have no more questions for Ms. Schaubach or Mr. Thorson. Are there any other questions for members? If not, we will go to folks with concerns. We will bring down, I believe, the chamber and the business partner. And if you could just tell us who you are.
Sure.
Okay, if you could all come up, please, with folks that have concerns about House File 665. And I would also say, and I didn't do this yesterday, and I apologize to members, I think we were okay, but members have bills up today that we're going to go to Garofalo and then Runbeck. Actually, we're not. If it's okay to the committee members, if we go to folks that aren't on the committee, I see Mr. Representative Ward. We'll go probably to Representative Ward because Bills and Loon and Garofalo and Runbeck are all on the committee. But is there anyone that has traveled into today's meeting to testify on any certain bill, members of the public? If there are, we'll be Representative Bills.
There is, I believe there is one. Somebody raised his hand.
Okay, sir, which bill are you looking at?
House File 11.
The Bills bill.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, we should be okay. We'll make sure. Okay, so with that, we're fortunate today to have with us, and I'd also just like to make a few comments before we get started with the folks that have concerns. I think we'll be moving this bill, we'll recommend that be recommended pass and sent to the Foreign Relations Committee, because this is very interesting. I'm learning a lot here. I had a visit this morning from the British Consulate, And they're setting up a meeting with Representative Hornstein and Senator Ortman, I believe it is. Very, very interesting. Just a few quick facts here. British companies, have over 14,000 employees in the state of Minnesota, and they're concerned about this bill and the potential negative effects that it could have. I just want to go through a few of these things on this bill. This is a very important bill. 22% of foreign affiliate jobs are British, and this is just our friends from the UK we're talking about here. The UK is second to Canada in number of employed persons in Minnesota. The UK is second to Germany in stock value in corporations in Minnesota, just a little short of $1 billion. You have companies like BP, GlaxoSmithKline, First Student, those bus guys, you know, the school buses, that's British. I didn't realize that. Smith Medical. There are 90 British companies in Minnesota. And their biggest concern, and Representative Hornstein, when you meet with them, they'll, I'm sure, say the same thing to you, but just for members, because I don't think they're going to be visiting with every member. They say that this bill would violate the fundamental principles of international commerce, which is a little bit out of our purview, but that's their biggest concern. And it would have to do with the double taxation treaty. Now we're into treaties that between the Brits, Great Britain, the UK, and the United States. So they're very concerned about that. There's some bilateral treaty we got to look into here. Oh, okay. There have been bills such as this, and I have a question maybe for Mr. Michael, because I asked the question yesterday to Representative Hornsey if there's any other states that have a law such as this. And Mr. Michael, did you say Montana has something like this? Montana? Okay, Montana. There is attempts in California, Massachusetts. Those have both failed. And so Congress can't do what Representative Hornstein is attempting to do here, but Representative Hornstein can attempt to do this because this could be done at a state level. So it you know, it's before us properly. But those are just a few things that the concerns from the British Consul. So with that, welcome to the Tax Committee. If we could just start, let's start with Mr. Hesse, and please introduce yourself and state your name for the record, and then we'll be getting into questions. Well, let's go with the testimony of all three, if that's okay with members, and then we'll go with questions of all three. Now, is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill with concerns? Okay, Mr. Hesse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Let me talk about the three aspects of the bill, starting with the foreign royalty deduction. And again, we oppose the legislation for several reasons. And first, the purpose of the foreign royalty deduction is to incent companies to develop technology and intellectual property here and license it to countries overseas. When they do that, they get a royalty payment, and Minnesota taxes 20% of that royalty payment. But what it really does is help create high-paying research and development jobs here in Minnesota so that they can then, again, develop that technology, the intellectual property, and license it to their foreign subsidiaries. Changing the deductibility of foreign royalties certainly could jeopardize that domestic R&D investment that we have in the state, and that's done quite well in the state over the years. With respect to foreign operating corporations, the Chamber continues to believe that maintaining the FOC structure is important. The purpose of the foreign operating corporation was to place U.S. companies operating outside the U.S. on an equal footing with their foreign competitors. That's still important today. It hasn't changed since 1988 when it was enacted. Income earned outside the U.S. with no relationship to Minnesota should not be taxed. And I think if you eliminate the foreign operating corporation structure, that is certainly a distinct possibility. And as Mr. Michael mentioned earlier, significant legislation was passed in 2008 and 2005 that adjusted the foreign operating corporation structure so that it dealt with the issues that I think the proponents are concerned about. With respect to tax havens and the definition of the domestic corporation, Again, we think there are several problems with that provision. First, companies are not operating in so-called tax haven countries to shield U.S. income because they can't shift U.S. source income to other countries without being taxed by the IRS. That's where that subpart F income, I'm told, comes into play, and the Internal Revenue Service will certainly look at that, and Minnesota will get its share. These provisions would clearly tax income from foreign operations, resulting in added complexity such as currency translation, translations of profits and losses, valuing foreign property, etc., and those are just added complexities that corporations need not undertake. Third, the list of countries deemed to be so-called tax havens is fairly expansive. Last year, there were only three countries on the OECD's uncooperative tax haven list. Last year, when I testified before this committee, there were none. And I know it was somewhat in jest and tongue-in-cheek that the author suggested that, when he received letters from Luxembourg or others that wanted to be removed from the bill, and it was. I'm guessing we could probably receive letters and generate letters from all the countries and nations listed in here. And if that's the if that's the rationale for the policy to have a tax haven legislation or have someone in or out of tax haven legislation, I'm not sure that policy is very strong. Then fourth, this provision could interfere with Congress's right to regulate commerce with foreign nations. As you just heard from the chair, the British consulate apparently has weighed in on that point, and we would agree that it has some troubling international commerce implications. So in summary, we believe the provisions of the bill jeopardize the state's success. We've had success here developing research and development jobs and high-tech industries in this state, I think in large part because we've had things like the foreign royalty deduction in conjunction with the research and development credit, although I recognize that's not dealt with in this bill, but those two provisions work, I think, really well together. Companies do locate high-paying technology and R&D jobs here despite the state's high corporate income tax rate. And again, if the foreign royalty deduction were eliminated, I think you would see a shift in those the location of those jobs. It would be a big loss to the state, both with respect to obviously the jobs, but also the personal income tax revenue and the other revenues that go along with that activity. So with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. We'll hold off on questions until Ms. Larson and the other gentlemen talk. But I would like to introduce, we're very privileged today to have with us today from the British Consulate, the Consulate General Robert Chatterton Dixon, if you could please stand, sir. And then we have Jonathan Daniel, the Deputy Head of the British Consulate. Welcome to the Tax Committee. Okay, Ms. Larson, your comments. And sir, the next gentleman, what was your name again here?
It's Peter Lindstrom from the Minnesota High Tech Association.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. We also oppose the bill. I won't repeat Mr. Hesse's comments. I'll just try to add a couple of points. He mentioned that these high-tech businesses that benefit from the foreign royalty deduction, this has been a strong industry for Minnesota. It's one of our best industries. They have extremely high-paying jobs. These companies can locate their R&D operations really anywhere around the country, and the concern is that if this bill were to pass, that those R&D jobs will move overseas, and we will not get any of the royalty income. In addition to not getting any of the income tax from those high-paid employees. And this proposal doesn't just impact the specific companies that benefit from the foreign royalty deduction, but it will have a negative ripple effect. Those companies all work with smaller companies that are their vendors. And so it'll impact small businesses, too, that depend on those larger businesses for some of their work. We also oppose the repeal of the Foreign Operating Corporation. As Mr. Hesse mentioned, there were some changes made to that provision a couple of years ago. And the provision is still needed. Otherwise, companies with foreign operations are going to be at a distinct competitive disadvantage to purely foreign companies that they're competing against. And we also oppose the so-called tax haven legislation. The federal government does already deal with this. It clearly is something that would likely be litigated if, in fact, it ever passed. And so we would hope that you don't support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Larson. And Mr. Lindstrom, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter Lindstrom with the Minnesota High Tech Association. The High Tech Association represents 350 corporate high-tech companies in the state. I just wanted to talk directly to the foreign royalty deduction aspect of this bill, and I wanted to emphasize to members that it's directly tied to our innovation economy, and it's directly tied to jobs. We have over 130 high-tech jobs in this state, and I would say that this aspect, the foreign royalty deduction, was put in the mid-1980s under the Perpich administration to help create high-tech jobs, and it's worked, and it is working. These 130,000 jobs pay fantastic wages. Average is 77,000. That's 68% higher than the average private sector wage. And in the conversations I've had with our member companies, they tell me that many of those scientists in their companies pay nearly double that $77,000 figure. So I think these are the jobs that we want to create and continue to create in Minnesota, and the foreign royalty deduction is a big part of that, and we hope that it stays a part of our tax code. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lindstrom. Okay, questions from members to Mr. Hesse, Ms. Larson, or Mr. Lindstrom? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if any of the witnesses can answer this or not, but you know, when it comes to the foreign royalty deduction, if you were to look at the top 30, 40, 50 users of that, how many would actually be Minnesota businesses? And I don't know if any of the testifiers would know that, or if someone from the Department of Revenue, or I mean, I know in all the years we've kind of debated this, I've never known for sure how big of an impact is it on actually Minnesota businesses versus how much would be exported. And so I don't know if someone could answer that
or not. Hesse, do you have those numbers? Or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, I don't have those numbers, but obviously the Chamber represents Minnesota companies, and so companies that have a physical presence here generally. So we're hearing from our members about this provision and its importance. And, you know, you can't eliminate the tax benefit from companies located out of state and keep it on the in-state. That would be unconstitutional. So, again, I just want to stress the importance of maintaining the foreign royalty deduction, because it does, as the others have said, really has impacted the growth of high-tech and research and development jobs in this state.
Representative Marquardt, maybe we could ask, there's a Steve Krenkel or Jenny Ryan from the Department of Revenue. I don't know if they'd have the answers.
And Mr. Chair, if we can't get that today, that would be fine. I just would really like to have that, because we've talked about this for a number of years. I've just never seen that, Mr. Chair. So it doesn't have to come today, certainly.
Okay, thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Knuth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for Ms. Larson. I was just curious if you could expand a little bit when you said that if we pass this, it would likely be litigated. And I'm not sure under how it would be litigated, so if you could explain that a little bit more, that would be helpful.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knuth, Mr. Chair Davids referenced this in his comments about the consulates. There's a concern that it violates international law. When this was brought up, I don't want to get into too much technical tax policy, but it sort of looks like worldwide unitary, when that was passed before, it was litigated, and there were changes made to the law. So I think that there are some questions as to whether or not the state would have the ability to tax this foreign income, and that's why there are concerns about that it would be litigated.
Representative Canoe?
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the Marquardt question. I do believe we have Mr. Mossman from Assistant Commissioner from the Department. We have Mr. Steve Krenkel. Mr. Mossman, could you talk about the Marquardt question, please?
Mr. Chair, Matt Mossman, Assistant Commissioner for Tax Policy, Department of Revenue, and I was in a conversation at the time. If Representative Marquardt could repeat the question, that would be helpful.
Representative Marquardt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mossman, what I was looking at is, of those who use the deduction for foreign royalties, you know, take the top, whatever, 30, 40, 50, you know, how many would actually be Minnesota-based companies? Just trying to get an idea of impact on Minnesota-based companies.
Assistant Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, I don't know that I can necessarily do it by only by the top 50 necessarily. There is obviously concentration in the foreign royalties provision in the subtraction, pardon me. What we found at the department that when we looked at it, just a bit of history, is that between 2001 and 2009, Minnesota companies accounted for between 16 and 30% of the royalty subtraction, and in the latest year we had information for the Minnesota company share was 21% of the foreign royalties subtraction benefit.
Representative Marquardt? Thank you, Mr. Mossman. Representative Lencheski, and then if there's no others, we will move on to the bills for the day. Representative Lencheski, but I'm not cutting off questions here. Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The testifiers are gone, so
they're back.
You know, okay. And maybe it's a question for you too, Mr. Chair, and that is, I think the discussion earlier today about, you know, respecting that people have a disagreement of opinion is a good one to have, and I think that Representative Paymar saying, you know, we're not even at May yet, is a good caution for everyone to think about here. And I understand that the lines have been sort of drawn, that in general the majority party says we don't need any revenue. I get that. We heard it from everybody. We have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. So I'm not under the illusion here that the majority party is going to provide any revenue to solve the deficit. And in fact, I would expect that they would not, to honor their commitment to what they ran on. So I don't expect, at least in the early stages of the session, we'll see any revenue, not only in the tax bill, but in any finance bill. No fees, no any kinds of revenue-raising moves, because that wouldn't honor the commitment of the new majority. So, you know, I understand that people have to honor what they ran on. On the other hand, the minority did want a balanced approach. And I think Representative Paymar and you, Mr. Chair, by saying, you know, we just can't understand how each other think, that's legit. And so, you know, some of us do really think there should be some revenue, and understanding, you know, that the governor's been saying that, the minority said that, the majority does not believe in that, I understand that. But nonetheless, the majority and the governor will have to compromise. That's just how it works, and I know, having done that with Governor Pawlenty many times, that's how it works. And so our business representatives for, you know, many employers in the state of Minnesota are sitting at this table, and we had heard before from some other folks who were supporting the Hornstein bill saying, you know, what I heard them saying really isn't the nuance of the pieces, because they're not business tax policy experts, but hey, we'd like some revenue, and this might be one we might be willing to look at to avoid some cuts. And so I do know there are many proposals here, and I do want to ask Mr. Hesse and Ms. Larson. Almost every business tax cut that's been considered in this state, I've authored. And in fact, today, Representative Ward has one for cut business taxes, and Representative Bills and Representative Luden, I've carried every one of those bills with the exception of the S-Corp pass-through, but most of the Luden bill. I've carried bills and have many before you, Mr. Chair, that we haven't heard, to abolish the corporate tax, to do all the things that we, single sales apportionment. I chief authored the research and development credit that we doubled last year under Governor Pawlenty. You know, I carried the angel investment credit, Section 1. I mean, there are so many tax benefits for business in Minnesota. And we don't collectively add them up very often because it's uncomfortable. You know, we have Jobs Ease and we have ethanol subsidies, and we've got people who want to, including me, pass on the Bush tax cuts, which is a big benefit to do conformity for business. And, you know, I'd just like to hear, in the whole medley of all of that, and again, supporting most of them, I'm realistic, we have a deficit. So it's hard to do all these things with a deficit. Are there any revenue raisers that the business community supports this year? Or is the position of the Minnesota Business Partnership and the Minnesota Chamber that they're going to line up with no revenue is needed to solve the deficit?
Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Lencheski, the direction that I've been given from our board of directors is to, you know, urge the legislature to, you know, fit the priorities of the state within the existing revenue streams. So use a more priority or outcome-based budget approach to, you know, fund first the, you know, all the things that collectively the legislature thinks are the priorities for the state of Minnesota to do. You know, after that budget is put together, you know, we can have the conversation about what's left, and if, you know, more revenue makes sense. I mean, I think our board right now would say, no, we can fit the priorities of the state within the 33, or whatever the current number is, the $33 billion of existing revenues. But I think we should certainly try as best we can to use that priority type based budgeting approach, figure out what that's going to look like, and then we can have the conversation later on.
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman Lincheski, the partnership, I agree with Mr. Hesse said. From our members' perspective, a couple of things. Businesses have also had to make very difficult choices in the last couple of years in terms of restructuring, downsizing, finding ways to continue to meet their customers' needs with less resources. They understand there will be very difficult decisions. I think they look at the longer-term picture in terms of the demographic changes the state is facing, the challenge of if the state does not seriously address some of the unsustainable spending, that we will be right back here again in 2 years looking at additional taxes to raise. So the Budget Trends Commission, that was a bipartisan commission a year or so ago, basically said that even if you do short-term tax increases, that's a short-term fix because the revenue growth just cannot meet the pace of the spending growth. We have some spending areas in the state that are growing at unsustainable rates. Now, we all understand that those are very difficult areas, but I think that's where our members are coming from, is to at least first, let's see if we can look at some of those really high-growth spending areas, try to do some reforms, and deal with, as Mr. Hesse said, priority-based budgeting before they would look at any revenue increases.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Larson and Mr. Hesse, I appreciate those answers, and I appreciate that I've had an excellent working relationship with both of you, and I understand you're doing a good job representing the business community. I just I don't have a question. I'll just say in closing that I do think that as people finish with their staking out their positions, you have a huge responsibility as the leaders of this business community in Minnesota to start to work on the compromise. And there will be a compromise, or we'll be here forever. And I think that, we've got a lot of legislators carrying tax cuts for businesses, lots of them. And you both know that that grows the deficit even larger still. And people can call them new spending or tax increases or tax cuts, call them whatever you want, but on a spreadsheet, they grow the deficit. We're going in the wrong direction if we're handing out tax cuts right now. So, I would hope that in your private conversations, you work hard to get folks to understand that. Even if we move to a new dynamic scoring model, Mr. Chair, not a static, which no state does, by the way. Some people do some dynamic scoring, but no one uses it in their budgets. Even in a best-case scenario where you kind of get 15 cents on the dollar, which I think is specious at best, tax cuts cost money, and we're bipartisanly, including me, we're carrying tax cut bills through this legislature right now. And I really hope as we get to not the majority's budget and not the governor's budget, but the end game, I think we need to all stop talking about ways that grow the deficit and limit the revenue that we even have in. And I think that's a common ground position, given that the majority doesn't want any new revenue at the table. So I look forward to working with you, both of you, on this, and I think we all have to stake out our ground, but then in the end, people have to compromise, and that day will come. So appreciate that you're here.
Representative Downey. And then I'd like to, if we could, I'm not going to cut members off here, but we do have Representative Ward here and others. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to follow up on Representative Markwart's line of questioning, and it's maybe a question for Mr. Hesse or Ms. Larson, whoever can answer it. Just confirm for us that the foreign royalty deduction and the foreign operating credits, regardless of whether the company resides here, those credits are only granted towards business activity that occurs here in Minnesota. Is that correct?
Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, the foreign operating corporation provision, is triggered if you are a domestic corporation, so you're incorporated within the United States, but have at least 80% of your, I think it's active, for of your income is active foreign business income. So if your corporation fits that definition, then you're a foreign operating corporation, and all the net income of that entity is deemed to be a dividend to the parent company, and Minnesota taxes 20% of that that deemed dividend. So that's basically the foreign operating corporation structure. The activity is outside of the, 80% of the active business income has to be, has to be foreign of that entity. So it's not necessarily activity that's here, but Minnesota is still taxing 20% of that income.
Representative Downey.
Well, I'm trying to reconcile the 21% answer of the Minnesota-based
and Mr. Chair,
presence.
Mr.
That was the discussion of Representative Marquardt, Mr. Mossman,
and
Mr. Hesse,
Representative Downey. That the so on the foreign royalty deduction is different, and my understanding is that it doesn't have to be activity within the state of Minnesota. Obviously, the activity that we hear about is activity that takes place in the state of Minnesota and is important to the members that we represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr.
Downey.
Yeah, and maybe a question for Ms. Larson. President Marco was trying to get at how many companies here in Minnesota leverage these things, and obviously it's important to your members. Do you have a sense out of your membership how many would actually be impacted by this change if it were made?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I don't have an exact number. Any company that's doing R&D, that's licensing technology overseas, can potentially benefit from this provision. So it could potentially be a small company. And it could be a small startup company that wants to be able to eventually license their technology overseas and get a royalty back. So, again, I don't have an exact number, but it's not limited to just big companies. It's not limited to just specific companies. If you meet the criteria, if you create the intellectual property and you license the technology overseas, you get a royalty back, you'll benefit from this provision.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I think I've asked this question before, but I can't remember where or when. But my recollection is I remember the astounding growth of the medical technology industry in Minnesota. Kind of off the charts for a state like Minnesota to have that presence compared to California and Massachusetts. And much of what I heard was that some of these provisions actually were kind of the breeding ground for some of that. I'm not asking you to give me a scientific answer, but do you share that? And would you attach the growth of some of our higher tech industries, at least in part, to some of these provisions that we'd be waiving? Are we at risk of compromising some of that?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I would agree. Minnesota was one of the first states to have an R&D credit. We'll probably talk about this more with Representative Bill's bill. But and then since then, I think other states have advanced in terms of increasing the tax credit rate. But Minnesota was one of the first states to have an R&D credit. The foreign royalty deduction, from my understanding from the companies that I represent, is a big part about as to why they keep their R&D activities here. So it even if some of the benefit goes to non-Minnesota companies, which, as Mr. Hesse explained, the law doesn't allow us to just give it to Minnesota companies. But for those companies that are here in Minnesota, it is a huge deal for them. And so this would have a very negative impact on those companies.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Downey.
Quick comment. So I just want us to be really, really careful. I know, Mr. Chair, you're being fair and hearing minority bills, and Representative Hornstein has every right to have this bill heard. But again, the signal that got sent across the country with Governor Dayton's tax increase proposal a month ago caused shockwaves that I still hear about. I know we think it's a little humorous to joke about these tax havens. When this bill was proposed last year, I personally heard from the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg, and I don't think anybody realizes northern area of the EU is a huge trading partner for us. And Luxembourg may sound like some little dinky country, but a huge volume of trade into that area goes through Luxembourg. And on top of that, now we're hearing about this again, and we got Hutch Tech and Medtronic laying off 2,000 people, and you know they're going to all redeploy their capital, and they're going to figure out where to do that and where to hire these people and where to keep their R&D and production facilities. And man, we keep sending signals like this out into the market, and I think we do so at our peril. So I just want to caution us as we continue going through these types of bills that you know, the outside world is watching and people are making decisions, and we're making a lot of people nervous.
Representative Marquardt, then Drazkowski.
Thank you very much. And I think the point I was trying to make, and I didn't realize it was going to be at 21%, but, you know, if we're looking at how to spend each dollar of economic development, and, you know, I don't know what the cost is exactly of this, but for every dollar, we know that about 79% is benefiting out-of-state businesses. And I guess the point being is that if we're really looking to make sure every dollar of what we do is the most efficient and is geared towards getting the best result, should we, we're only getting 21% to Minnesota businesses, would it be better to spend a dollar to a Minnesota business, all 100%, you know, Main Street businesses, in some form of tax relief or benefit? And that's, I think that's the point. And I think what Representative Hornstein brings up is, you know, is this the most efficient use of our tax dollars when, in fact, so much of it is being exported? So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mark. Representative Drazkowski, then Carlson, then we're going to get into some bills here. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask, and I did hear the testimony, but if we could just distill it down. We are, as I understand, there are about 200,000 Minnesotans that don't have a job. And I'm curious, will this bill increase or decrease the capacity of Minnesota businesses to bring forward more jobs and expand? Increase or decrease?
Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I think eliminating the foreign royalty deduction, the foreign operating corporation structure, and enacting so-called tax haven legislation would certainly jeopardize some Minnesota jobs.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Hesse, you're saying that it would decrease the capacity of Minnesota employers to bring forward more hires and more jobs. Is that correct,
Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, that would be my understanding, yes.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hesse.
Representative Carlson, and then we're going to go to Rukavina. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you know, yesterday and again this morning, there's been references to Hutchinson Technology, and I think we have to be a little careful when we reference a specific business without knowing the why. And I think we all feel bad for the community of Hutchinson and those employees that are being laid off. But this morning's paper, and I happened, because of the discussion yesterday, make a copy of it, but they talk about what happened with Hutchinson Technology. Just a couple of key points. The company made mistakes, including committing a money-losing biomedical business over expanding capacity 3 years ago in its suspension assembly business, and making technical errors in the new assembly called TSA Plus. And this is a stock analyst that's making that point. So there are errors made, and by the way, they're changing the leadership at the company because of the history in recent years. But probably more importantly is the competition. And they make disk drives. And disk drives are old technology. And it says here, Hutchinson's business also isn't being helped by Apple's iPod computer and its imitators, which use flash memory instead of disk drives. And so the point is that there's new technology out there, mainly out of Apple, and they're losing business, and they'll probably lose another 25% according to this article, but it's they have an old technology, and they've also made some decisions that weren't the best. So my only point is, I think we have to, when we're having these kind of discussions, have an understanding as to what may be happening within a given company. And maybe some of the tax credits and research might have helped, but they were investing in a technology and losing money hand over fist. And by the way, in full disclosure, with Hutchinson Technology, I followed a pattern that I all too frequently have, you know, buy high and sell low. the reason I perk up with Hutchinson and I every 3 months get their reports because I do have a few shares, and very few, but enough to entitle me to get the reports, so I know what's been happening with Hutchinson, and it just doesn't fit the discussion that we're having here, is my only point.
Representative Rukavina?
Ah, I'll pass, Mr. Chair. I was kind of, you know, you told me to be nice. I was.
I didn't tell you to be nice.
I heard you harass the AFL-CIO yesterday, so I was going to do the same.
Isn't it fun to be able to, just the thought of that, well, no. I love the AFL-CIO. Representative Downey, then we're going to the ward bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick response to Representative Carlson. You know, there's a constant creative destruction and recreation process in a free market economy, and I'm told by some economists that in Minnesota alone, 400,000 jobs are destroyed and recreated just by virtue of the fact that companies go in and out of business, their ideas work, their ideas don't work. And when it's that dynamic, and the redeployment of capital and people to ideas and technologies and business models and all of these things is literally happening every single day, and the number of transactions and decisions that are made is literally in the thousands, maybe the millions, in terms of where people deploy themselves and their capital. Public policy, tax policy, business climate policy issues, they have an incremental effect. And I just want to make sure that as we think about this, that we're thinking about that overall context. And so Hutchinson's technology isn't an example of, gee, bad tax policy caused them to go under. It's just the recognition that, you know what, there's a whole, that company is going to pivot and they're going to go somewhere else and they're going to develop something and deploy their money and whatever they got left, they're going to rebuild it and reinvent it. And I think we want that to be here in Minnesota, and we need to improve the business climate so that a greater share of those incremental decisions get made for us as compared to outside of our four walls. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't want to respond because I thought Representative Carlson had a good response to Representative Downey, but then he came back again, so I just can't resist. I do think, though, that for the last 8 years, we've had a governor who said to the entire country and the entire world that Minnesota was a high-tax, high-regulatory state. And so I don't think looking at a Hornstein bill, which some of us may or may not support, or looking at the Dayton 3% surcharge, is going to send a damaging signal that's going to send businesses fleeing our state in any more of a damaging way than the Pawlenty statements over the past 8 years. And I think, you know, Representative Downey, because we looked at it in the Small Business Caucus, and I think members of the Tax Committee have been looking at the tax climate issue, that really some of that was overstated and some of it was hyperbole, and I think unnecessarily created a perception of Minnesota that's not accurate. So I thought that the counterpoint needed to be made to the Representative Downey point.
Thank you, Representative Hartman. Representative Carlson?
Well, I was just going to say that I think we all know that businesses start and stop and new technologies replace. I don't disagree with that premise. However, it did make me think of a point that I probably should have made. Back in Hutchinson, Minnesota, they are retaining in Hutchinson their research divisions and all of that. It's unfortunately the production employees that are by and large being laid off because their technology is no longer state-of-the-art. Hopefully those researchers will be able to regenerate future growth in the company, and they'll be able to reemploy people in Hutchinson, Minnesota. But the point is that the stock analysts were not saying anything about business climate. It was decisions and competition within the industry that were causing the problems for Hutchinson Technology. And some of their stockholders, by the way.
Representative Anderson?
Well, not to belabor this, but, you know, when it comes to having a company move their headquarters to Wisconsin because competition is one of the concerns, the tax code and a climate that we have in our state makes it more difficult to do business here in the state of Minnesota. So I think we also need to be looking at that as well.
Representative Hornstein, a wrap up, and then we're going to move on.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you so much for this really lively hearing, and I think we surfaced a lot of really important issues. One final point that I just wanted to refute that came up here. in crafting this bill, there are several international organizations as well as the IRS that have very specific criteria to identify countries where there are tax havens. So what happened when representatives of other countries contacted me, we looked at those lists. And when several of those lists dropped those countries from, you know, being considered a tax haven, then we dropped them. But there are certainly, the OECD was referenced, that's one of the organizations we look at. There are certainly tax haven countries. And there are certainly very credible organizations, including our own Internal Revenue Service, that has identified them with criteria, very strict criteria for getting on this list. So I don't take this list lightly. And to suggest that this practice is not happening and it doesn't have financial consequences is misleading. And so I wanted to say that for the record. And in addition to thanking you, Mr. Chair, I just want the committee and all of us in the legislature to look at ways that we can solve this deficit. And I believe this is one tool we can use. There are expenditures here. I think points were made. Is this really, Representative Marquardt made them, is this really the best bang for our buck? And we hear these large numbers of jobs that are potentially on the line because this relatively small sub-state subsidy is being looked at. I think we should be a little cautious of throwing these numbers around. This bill is not going to impair thousands of jobs in the state of Minnesota. And in fact, if we have $300 million more revenue, we certainly can protect and create jobs. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, and I also wanted to thank the committee for, I think, an important conversation about civility that we can take forward as well. And if that was a result of my bill, then all the better. So, again, my thanks to you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this bill and allowing the conversation.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. The chair lays over House File 665 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Ward. I will move House File 253 for the committee here. Representative Ward, welcome to the Tax Committee, sir. If you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about a jobs bill important to the state and small businesses in the state of Minnesota. As I sat and listened to the last dialogue, so many of you referenced jobs and the importance of retaining and creating jobs in the state of Minnesota, and House File 253 is just that. It's a jobs small business creator growth bill for the state of Minnesota. Members, just today in the Brainerd Daily Dispatch, an article came out that says Brainerd unemployment jumps to 18.1% for January. The city of Brainerd proper has the highest unemployment rate for cities over 10,000 for the last 27 months, going on 3 years. Members, every job loss to the state, in my district, District 12A, Crow Wing County, is critical and important. So, members, last session, we passed last session, according to Deputy Commissioner Mark Lathos of Deed, he claimed that the last session, a 2010 legislative session, was one of the most successful sessions in the history of the state for small business, for small business in the state of Minnesota. We passed many great pieces of legislation that you already heard about, the Angel Investor Tax Credit, the R&D incentive, the historical renovation, and much more. There was, however, a piece of legislation that was passed that did hurt the small businesses, and this was brought to my attention by a constituent. And so House File 253, that was the piece that we passed was June accelerated tax payments. And so House File 253 repeals the required June accelerated tax remittance for sales and use tax, tobacco and cigarette taxes, and liquor taxes, beginning with June 2011 tax liability. Persons with an annual tax liability of $120,000 or more for any of these taxes are currently required to remit 90% of the June collections before the end of June. This also eliminates the early monthly sales and use tax payment for all other months for vendors with the annual liability of $120,000. That provision was enacted in 2010 to alleviate a potential state cash flow problem. Members, I just want to, my constituent, her name is Marie Landsberg. She, her and her husband Roger own Landsberg Nursery up in Brainerd, and they're very, very strong community supporters, and they run a wonderful operation, and they have a lot of employees in their business. She's not able to be here today, but she did send me a letter, members. And Mr. Chair, with your okay, I just want to read part of the letter that she sent to me, indicating, you know, why she and others, small business owners, feel so strongly that we repeal the accelerated tax payments. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, I'm just going to read a bit of this letter, and it states, please realize that like many Minnesota businesses, we are a seasonal operation. That's Landberg Nursery. As a retail garden center with a nursery and greenhouses, as well as being a landscape contractor, we are closed for the winter months. There is no income during that time. In the spring, when sales do start, we have already had a huge outlay of capital to pay for payroll and inventory costs for spring startup. For the past number of years, we have been required to make an accelerated sales tax payment in May for a June sales tax liability. This in itself seems discriminatory. Apparently, this scheme was invented a few... the scheme is her words, members. I don't want to be... scheme is her words, members. I don't want to represent war... But anyhow, outside of that... apparently, this scheme was invented a number of years ago to make the state books for that fiscal year look better, and like most laws, it was never repealed. With this new law, we are now expected to predict our sales for each month and prepare our sales tax liability based on a guess. Now, we must pay a payment twice a month. First, the guess payment for the current month by mid-month, and then by the 20th of that month, we pay again for the previous month of after our actual sales have been determined and our prepayment for that month calculated in. Twice the paperwork for our business and for the state as well. How ridiculous is this? Again, her words, members. Where is the gain for the state? Double the paperwork for some additional dollars on the books for a couple weeks would probably amount to a little gain, and in fact would probably amount to a loss to a loss when calculating staff hours. For business, however, it amounts to a double loss, double plus paperwork and prepaying with money that we have yet brought in. We're expected to pay up front on the possibility of future sales. Therefore, we are financing this with our own working capital. How right is this, and is it even legal? It is actually highway robbery. Not only that, if we do not guess correctly and we underpay, we must pay a fine of 10% for our underpayment. Of course, I am sure that the thought is that no one will want to underpay and be fined, so they will overpay to avoid the penalty. Then you will be credited for the next month. The state has prepaid dollars and or fine and gains at the expense of the business. Any way you look at it, business is the loser. These are not actually glowing economic times, as we all know. Businesses are struggling, failing, and some are closing their doors. Once closed, they are not likely to reopen again. We at Landsberg Nursery are doing everything we can to keep our current staff employed and want to expand our job growth. Customers are not spending, even those who are financially well-fixed. Our sales are never close to the same each month, and it's difficult in our industry to compare monthly sales on an annual basis. Much depends on the weather. Many businesses would follow a similar pattern. In these economic times, sales are certainly not up, so predicting on an annual basis does not work well. This is just another costly mandate with no consideration on how it affects business. And I'll end there, members. And I just want to end by saying, and that's from Marie and Roger Landsberg, business owners in my district. And rather than placing obstacles in the path of Minnesota businesses, you know, we should be encouraging small business growth and development. And it seems that this law flies in the face of doing just that, and that is why it should be repealed. members, I am impressed with the level of intelligence and actually spiritedness on this committee. And I am not a great knowledgeable person on tax situations, but I do know that we have many small businesses in our district that hire a significant number of people in my area. And every one job loss that we have is so important. So members, I ask you for your consideration in passing House File 253. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I'll stand for any questions if I can answer them.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of the Ward bill? Is there anyone that... Oh, on behalf, Mr. Hickey, please join us. And then just for a show of hands, is there anyone that wishes to testify with concerns on the bill? Okay, please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business, and I just want to make a few brief comments. We're the largest small business organization in the state and have a lot of retail members, or just members in general who are been affected by this law for a long time. I want to thank Representative Ward for bringing it forward. I've heard numerous complaints over the years about the burden of it, the annoyance of it, and it's great we're having a discussion about it today. I did talk to one of my members yesterday. He said the real problem with the June is that he's having to dig a lot of money out of his own pocket to make those payments, whereas on the normal 14th, 15th of the month, he's able, most of the payments catch up. He said credit card payments catch up for the 14th or the 15th in the next month for most of the month's payments. But the June one really does pose a problem. So here you have a small entrepreneur have to dig into his own pocket and do this exercise for the state. And it is a burden, and I've heard a lot of complaints about it over the years, and I'm glad you're considering trying to eliminate it.
Any question for Representative Ward or Mr. Hickey? Representative Downey.
Thank you. Question for Mr. Hickey, maybe. How do other states do collections on sales and use tax? Are they on a comparable kind of timing schedule? It seems to me like this is kind of a one-time cash flow issue, but maybe just a description of other states and how we would stack up here in Minnesota with that, absent the June early payment. Just in general, how do we compare?
Mr. Hickey?
Representative Downey, I defer to counsel, but I heard a lot of states do this, but I'm not up on what other states do.
Mr. Michael, to the Downey question.
Mr. Chairman, I have not, and I don't believe we, the House Research, has surveyed what the practices are in other states. I think, I don't think that Minnesota's practice is the common practice to have this sort of prepayment of the June. I mean, there are two elements in Representative Ward's bill. One is the cash flow provision that was enacted last year, and I know that we may be unique or, you know, one of very few that does this, but then there's this separate June accelerator, which was done as sort of a budget balancing provision years ago that shifts those June sales tax collections into that current fiscal year, and so it has a budget impact, which is why when you look at the revenue estimate, it shows up as a huge one-time cost. Honestly, I don't know how many other states may have engaged in that sort of accounting technique to balance their budget.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe follow-on question for Mr. Michael. So the 14th and the 20th, the kind of non-pre-early June stuff, how do we stack up? How do we compare just in our normal sales and use tax collections and prepayments?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, I think when this was discussed last year, that's an unusual circumstance, a fairly unusual practice to do that. And, you know, there are other bills around that have, if just repealing that feature, that was done for cash flow purposes, right? Because this, you know, the state was concerned that they wouldn't be able to actually meet bills within the month. And I think now that some of those concerns have gone away and there, you know, there may be an opportunity to repeal that, not the June accelerated, but that other provision.
Representative Downey? Representative Lincheski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, maybe just to encourage you to find the money to do this, if you look at the revenue estimate, it's $257 million in the first year, and I want to thank Representative Ward for paying for recognizing that. There's been some other authors in front of this committee this year who've put it out to a future legislature, and you're being honest here and showing what it costs to undo this gimmick. And Mr. Chair, I will say, you know, I was part of creating this gimmick. It's a bad idea. I encourage you to get rid of it. This was a result of the fact that Governor Pawlenty was unwilling to raise the traditional taxes, but all we have to do is look at this revenue estimate. We know this is revenue. This was another gimmick, a one-time shift to attempt to avoid being able to say you are for revenue, and this would be a huge benefit to Minnesota businesses if you could find the way to come up with this money in your omnibus tax bill, and I think there'd be broad bipartisan support for that. So just thank Representative Ward for being here and hope you will consider it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, a question for Council. What year was the June accelerated sales tax first put in place?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, it was in the early 80s. I think it may have actually gotten to the point where we were I don't think we ever turned it off, but I believe it was in the early, I don't know, I'm looking at Pat if she knows. I believe it was like, you know, 82 or 83 or something like that.
Mr. Chairman, was...
Dalton? Or 82, 83, you think? Mr. Chair, why don't you come to the table here for the Garofalo question?
I know the answer. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Pat Dalton from House Research. I believe Mr. Michael is correct. I believe it was 83. It was at a lower rate over the years. The percentage that has had to be paid early has gone up. In the late 1990s, early 2000s, we were actually moving the other way and reducing the percentage of payment that had to be made early. And then in the last few years, we've gone back the other way, and so now it's at 90%.
Or Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, I looked it up, and it was actually 1981 that we did this.
So, Mr. Chairman, was Tim Pawlenty governor in 1981?
Del Cui was. And he compromised.
I'm still concerned about the League of Nations with Woodrow Wilson, but Representative Garofalo.
So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Riccovino, this is a tactic that has been used for 3 decades in the state of Minnesota, and I don't think it's fair to blame one governor or one person for it. I agree with Representative Lincheski. I don't like this, but I do think it's unfair to try to blame one person for it.
Representative Lincheski, then Riccovino. Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, to that point, and Representative Garofalo, I think you should criticize me. I think I'm the one who was blaming Representative or Governor Pawlenty. But myself as well, and I think what I'm trying to signal here, it is a gimmick that both parties have used over the years, and there are a whole bunch of them. I mean, these one-time shifts and gimmicks and putting it off have been done bipartisanly, but this new majority has the chance to undo it if that's the priority of the majority in the omnibus tax bill. And I just want to own the part that I contributed to it, and Governor Pawlenty. I don't want to solely blame him. You're right, it's been around since the 80s, but we made it dramatically worse in the last few years, and Ms. Dalton may know what the percentage was and what we went to, and this continued to be one of the things that Governor Pawlenty would sign, and he signaled he would sign this, so we employed it rather than permanent cuts or permanent tax increases. It's one of those piles of gimmicks that's in the tax code, so I want to own that too, but it was Governor Pawlenty's willingness to sign it that made it also be feasible.
Representative Rukabee and then Kiffmeyer, or excuse me, Representative Garofalo. I'm sorry, Representative Garofalo, you still have the floor.
Well, no, I picked on Rukabee because he burned me with the Cui comment, so that's why I had to do that. But well, I think I'm done. We can move on to the next issue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
And what's wrong with Millard Fillmore? You named your owner at Coney after.
No, I'm still mad about the League of Nations with President Woodrow Wilson.
Me too, because Woodrow Wilson.
Millard Fillmore is a pretty cool guy. He was the head of the know-nothing.
I'm still mad at Calvin Coolidge for saying, let's keep America for Americans, and he didn't want my ancestors coming to this country. But that's a whole other issue, too. I digress.
No, Millard Fillmore was the head of the know-nothing party.
Yes. And but, you know, just a comment on the whole thing, and you know, it's sad. We all of us talk about our little business men and women and how they create most of the jobs. And then there are instances where our tax policy picks on them more than others. They're the ones that basically collected sales tax. It's not, you know, 3M or whatever doing it. Mostly it's our little business people or the bigger chain stores and that. But this is just another example of kind of shifting money around to balance things out, whether it was Al Cui or Rudy Perpich or, you know, Arne Carlson or Tim Pawlenty who did it. And we got to face reality once in a while. And there are a lot of bills, you know, that are introduced this year that are, again, going to help some multinational corporations that don't need the help. And I'm specifically referring to corporate income tax. There's a lot of little businesses that don't pay corporate income tax because for the last 2 or 3 years they've had such a terrible cash flow problem. They're not paying any income tax, either on their own personal or their business. And yet we've got a number of bills that are going to cut revenue or being proposed to cut revenue for larger corporations, and it's going to be the little business people that we all want to help that, you know, are probably going to end up getting higher property taxes because of it. So we should keep that in mind as we're going. And And Representative Garofalo, I really like you, you know, but I don't even know if you were born in 1981. But I just wanted to, you know, a little bit of history here. We just got to keep... We have to know history. We have to know where we've been and to find out where we're going. So, you know. Yes, one of us. We should have a little history lesson on compromise from our old and wise senior member on the committee, who's the only one left here from the Cui administration when they were here, I believe, and finally adjourning in the special session as they opened up the new session in January. And we could be here then doing that. I wanted to be in Representative Anderson's Christmas. I told her I was going to give her a present in her Christmas stocking years ago on my committee that we should have stayed here ourselves. So maybe we'll have that opportunity this year. And I've got a great present picked up for you, too.
Representative Kiffmeyer, then we're going to move on, I hope.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just also with the conversation while you're waiting, that you have to have a business to have a job. And the recognition that jobs don't just kind of exist in the vapor. You have businesses, and they have something to do with that job. And I think that's a really important thing. But in regards to this shift on these tax payments, it kind of reminds me of the education shift that we did. Okay. Right. And I know that one of the ways that we resolved the education shift was to put in statute that when the revenues, and it is a when, that first of all, we restored our reserves. Secondly, we paid back the education shift. But I think when we do some of these kinds of things, we are good business folks who create jobs as a businessman or woman, that maybe we might think of resolving this matter in that sort of way, which might be a little bit more in line with what we've done with other things, and recognizing that, because I think we do want to see to it we pay for them, but when we still have a $5 billion number to deal with, spending money in this year to do that, I recognize that, Representative Lunchesky, but just wanted to offer that up as an idea and would have an amendment to do such a thing as we move forward in the next process. Thank you.
Okay, I will lay over House File 253 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much, Representative Ward, for your presentation. Okay, the bill next will be House File 11. Representative Bills moves Bill's bill to consider. And we have a gentleman that is testifying in support of Representative Bill's legislation, House File 11. And so is there anyone that would wish to testify with concerns on House File 11? Okay, Representative Bills, please present your bill to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 11 be laid over.
I've already moved.
Oh, you already did that. Thank you. I was trying to give some instructions to my testifier here, and I just want to say to him and the committee that I'll give some words first, and then my testifier will speak. So, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What you have before you today is a proposal that would increase the research and development tax credit for both small and large businesses. One of the first concepts of any economics curriculum is a study of production possibilities. Given a certain state of resources, capital, workforce, and entrepreneurialism, a state or country will have a certain potential to produce goods and services. The main determinants of productive capabilities or possibilities at any given time are the state of technology, the quantity and/or quality of the workforce, available capital goods or tools or machinery used to produce other goods, natural resource base and management expertise specifically relating to the production function or having different marginal productive capabilities of different workers. In the long run, if technology improves or if the productivity or supply of factors of production increases, the economy's capacity to produce goods and services increases. This is what economists call real economic growth. We should remember that the size of our state's revenue base under current tax structuring is directly related to real economic growth in many ways. Because certain goods, such as capital goods and technology, are beneficial to the overall production within the economy, there is cause to focus policy bias on the progress of these factors. This would also be true for our natural resource base, workforce development, entrepreneurial characteristics, and managerial abilities. Higher investment in these factors of production would shift out or increase our abilities to produce in the long run. According to studies done by Salau in 1956, Romer 1990, and Tibaldi and Elmsley in 2006, the main driver of innovation, technology, and new products is research and development activities. The expansion of research and development can be the first step to what has been described as a virtuous economic cycle, contributing to productivity growth, new product development, and the expansion of exports. If you would like more information on this, I would direct you to a study in 2007 by Atkinson. If you would like to see the results of a study that found companies appear willing to move R&D from one state to another in response to costs surrounding their activities, you could find that work in a working paper at the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco that was done in 2005. Remember, there are hundreds of high-tech companies and educational institutions in Minnesota, over 300 represented by the High Tech Association, whose CEO and president is Margaret Anderson Kelleher. These companies conduct over $6 billion worth of R&D each year, I believe, from my research, and employ around 130,000 Minnesotans with our average wages roughly, from the information we just received, of about $77,400, and payrolls that extend over $10 billion. Minnesota was on the cutting edge of R&D when we created a tax credit in 1982. The federal government and more than 30 states join us now. When you couple this with states with no to little corporate income tax and foreign countries that have done the same, I hope you will come to the understanding of how important it is to think fast and stay ahead of the curve on this issue. It is no great leap of logic to understand that these companies who live, eat, and breathe technology are very responsible and are very responsive, I should say, to the local, regional, and state climate in terms of R&D. In economics, we call this responsiveness elasticity. According to the OECD's Generosity of R&D Tax Incentive Studies, 1996 found the U.S. ranked 7th, the United States of America. In 2004, 17th, and thanks to countries increasing their credits and some missteps, in my opinion, here at home as a nation, in 2009 we ranked towards the bottom. Some people say last, but I would defer. Disagree. If you have certain leanings towards how France runs its public policy, I would encourage you to look at their R&D initiatives as they rank in the top three of recent studies done by the OECD. This is my proposal under the current statutes and codes that we have in this state. My only disappointment in bringing this small piece of legislation forward is that our future requires us to do so much more. With labor force participation rates at 25-year lows and a globalized labor market becoming increasingly educated and hungry for middle-class status, we must work together to lead Minnesota forward. If you would like to work together to completely restructure our tax code for the 21st century, please contact me, as I'm working on just that. Everyone from Karl Marx to Adam Smith agreed and agrees that we are going to collect taxes. Today, it's important to talk about how. In my opinion, that will take a few brave people from both parties who don't mind having a Thelma and Louise moment as we hold hands and dive into the great future of economic prosperity, productivity, and the wealth of nations, the new wealth of nations, regardless of political virtue. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have a testifier.
Thank you, Representative Bills. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dwayne Dill. I am president of Dalex Livestock Solutions. We are a small agricultural software company. I employ five individuals. As it pertains specifically to research and development, it is virtually impossible to fund research and development using traditional borrowing of any type. Research and development, my experience anyway, has been that you fund it by the operating reserves, the revenue that remains after you've paid all other bills. And so the model that we employ within our business is to try to retain as much cash as possible in the business for the purposes of continuing our research and development activities. The only dollars that we draw out of our business are, aside from the salaries that we would take, are for the purposes of paying taxes. And by what we have used the research and development tax credit to keep dollars in and to accelerate our ability to make research and development investments. And for that purpose, I believe it is a very beneficial tax credit, and one that I would encourage you to continue to support.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dill. Any questions for Mr. Dill or the author? Seeing none, the chair lays over House File 11 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Tax Bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Bills and Mr. Dill. Okay, the next bill is the Garofalo Bill. We'll have Chair Garofalo head to the table. And Chair Garofalo moves House File 725 so that it is before the Tax Committee. Chair Garofalo, welcome to your committee. If you could please present your bill. But before we do that,
did you get a memo that I didn't, Mr. Chair? This is my committee now?
It's our committee.
Okay.
Is there anyone, first of all, just so I kind of see how we do on the time here, that wants to support, testify on behalf of the Garofalo bill? Okay. Is there anyone that has concerns about the Garofalo bill? Okay. We have one, Dr. Wilson. Okay. If you could please present your bill, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, House File 725 brings up an issue that we've had previous discussions on in this committee, and that is with regards to the tax incident study and figuring out who pays what percentage of their income in taxes. Currently, the tax incident study neglects to find out the burden that is collected under federal income taxes, federal payroll taxes, 9/11 security fees, and other items. So what I would request is that with this bill, the tax incident study would also take into account those federal taxes, so that we're not looking at, when we're looking at measuring overall tax burden, that we are not looking at a small portion of the picture. Then, in fact, we are taking a look at the entire picture and understanding the full ramifications of tax code changes. Mr. Chairman, that is a brief description of my bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions on it.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Let's bring down Dr. Wilson, if we could, from the department, with his comments on House File 725. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record and present your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Wilson from the Department of Revenue, no relation to Woodrow Wilson. please be able to hear. I'm not really speaking in opposition to this bill, but I wasn't quite sure how else to respond when you asked the question.
Concerns,
yeah. And again, Representative Garofalo has accurately presented what we do and what we don't do. The current incident study looks at what Minnesota state local taxes Minnesotans pay. This would look at what Minnesota and federal taxes. I'll make my comments very brief on this. The proposed extension is feasible to do. It's technically feasible. It's not something we can't do. However, it is not easy to do. It is something that requires us to bring in federal taxes. That includes the payroll taxes. It includes, as was mentioned, things like the telecommunications taxes, all the other alcohol, the excise taxes, some of these things we have not worked on before. So it's not straightforward, but it is certainly technically feasible to do. In these budget times, we're not looking for more work, but it's certainly something that we can do. We have a fiscal note, I believe, on this bill, which does suggest some additional cost to complete this work. A second point is just that this would require us to redefine income. If you include payroll taxes as part of the tax burden, then we have to add back the employer portion of the payroll tax and include that in income. There's nothing wrong with doing that. That's what federal studies do when they look at their incident studies. But this would mean we would have to change the definition of income in the tax incident study, which would make it non-comparable, which may lead to some confusion. But that's going to be an essential part of doing this. And finally, if the goal is to look at the total tax burden on Minnesotans, this still is not a complete assignment, because just as we export some of our taxes to other states and people in other states, their taxes are in fact paid by, to some extent, by Minnesota residents. So if you include the federal taxes and Minnesota state and local taxes, you've got one missing piece still, which is the burden that we import or that other states export to our residents. That is probably a harder knot to unwind or it'd be more difficult to do. I'm not sure it's impossible to do. It would be more difficult to do. The bill at current time doesn't ask us to do that, but I think if you really want to know the total burden, you really want to bring that element into the analysis as well. So, again, we're not looking for this. I'm somewhat concerned about the workload as some of our failures to meet deadlines this session suggests. Adding one more thing is not something we're looking for, but it certainly is technically feasible.
Ms. Templin, could you please, for the committee, describe the preliminary fiscal note, because I don't believe we have that. And then I'll go to Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, there is a preliminary fiscal note on this bill, and the author of the bill did receive the preliminary fiscal note. It has not been signed off by the EBO, and that is why it is considered preliminary. But the information that we have so far shows that the additional cost with the proposal by Representative Garofalo is about $15,000 starting in fiscal 12. And the cost of $15,000, the fiscal note describes, is mostly because, as Mr. Wilson indicated, would be staffing and additional modeling work that the department would need to do.
Thank you. Representative Paymar.
No, that's my question. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo. You know, I've really appreciated the incidence report because it really lets us know what the marginal impact of our decisions are and what the impact is of past decisions on the people we represent. And I see it as a guide to my making decisions about the things I can control. And I'm wondering if when we see all of the federal impact brought in, it makes it harder for us to actually be as accountable as this document makes us to the voters and to people who are researching tax policy about what the impact is of the decisions we make. Because I don't feel like I can influence much what the federal government has done in its tax code. I mean, I think we accept the conformance because it makes it easier for our businesses and our individuals, but I really use it as primarily a tool to help me weigh decisions that we're going to make around this table. And so adding that in, to me, kind of muddies it. I think we need to acknowledge that there are other tax burdens in people's lives, and maybe there can be a couple of tables, but I really want the focus to remain on the decisions that we influence here. And can you give me a little more of your thinking on this? Is it more just to demonstrate that the feds are, there are other tax burdens on people, or, how do you see us using that in our decision-making?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, two things. One, this bill is not intended to replace that indicator. If people want to see what percentage of income, who pays what on state and local taxes, that's still going to be in there. But also, as part of this report, you'd have supplemental information, which would include, when you look at all taxes, what percentage of the income is being paid. When you look at all taxes. And the primary reason why I'm driving this, Representative Loeffler, is because I genuinely believe that the public is misinformed on this issue. They actually believe that the wealthiest 20, 15, 10, 5% pay a smaller percentage of their income in taxes than do the middle and lower classes. And as we've discussed before in this committee, that is just false, just blatantly inaccurate. And so I think one of the responsibilities we have in this committee is to help educate the public. Again, I'm not looking to replace existing information. I'm saying this would be a supplement to the information that's contained in the existing tax incident study.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, Mr. Chair, I respect the viewpoint that you're coming from, Representative Garofalo. I still think our focus has to be on our responsibilities here. And I think it is an accurate statement that our state and local taxes have the results that you just described. There also is a different impact, apparently, if you add in other provisions of the federal tax bill. And I don't think we want to use this or any other data to move away from the honest sharing of information about the impacts of our decisions. And so I am I think we need to think carefully about this, because I do think it can, in some ways, be a way to hide the impact of our decisions rather than more greatly expand it. But I'm glad to hear that you expect this to be supplementary and not that the federal impact would be on every single page of every single analysis.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, again, I'm not hiding or concealing any information. We're providing additional information to make sure the taxpayers and citizens are fully informed in these items. Again, there is this misconception that we can... I'll just leave my comments at that. Representative Loeffler.
Okay, the plan for committee members here. First of all, we have two bills before us yet that we're not going to get to. We have a loan bill and we have a runback bill. I just wanted to ask if there is anyone regarding the runback bill or the loan bill that is here to testify for the bill or with concerns on the bill.
That came from over
50 miles. No, Will. Came from over a mile. If you live at the Kelly, you're not included. Okay, so with that, we have a couple questions for Representative Garofalo. And thank you, Dr. Wilson, for your testimony. Representative Bills and then Downey. Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Garofalo, for bringing this forward. I do think it's important to have data, and I'm glad that they'll be separate, but that we can use them as a resource. And I had stepped out for a little bit, but I was just wondering if there was any inclusion in the in studying federal tax incidents of the something that economists call the inflation tax, or a loss of purchasing power due to expanding our monetary base, if that would be included in your study.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bills, the data that I've read at is from the Congressional Budget Office, and it measures a percentage of income that is paid in all federal taxes. Whether that, I'm assuming there's some level of inflation, but whether the assessment of that inflation indicator is accurate or inaccurate, I am not in possession of that information, or nor harbor an opinion.
Representative Bills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Representative Garofalo, and I would encourage us to maybe look at another set of data, so literally three sets of data, where we're actually looking at the federal tax incidents, the state tax incidents, but then also studying our money, which is our circular, which is our flow of how our economy works, and if you define a dollar, a dollar is only good for what it can buy. So if you're working class families are working for these wages that are consistently being driven down in purchasing power by expanding your monetary base, then maybe that's a pretty good thing that we should have in mind when we're deciding about if you're going to try to redistribute income or move incomes around. We should probably have that as an understanding. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think this is a great bill and a great idea. I think we've heard from many commentators that the federal government's going to have no choice but to increase taxes at some point to find a way to solve their problems with their deficit and debt. So I think it'll be really important for us to watch those trends over time and understand the interactions of our tax policy with theirs. And I also think it's really important because we talk, I think, in a misleading way about marginal tax rates as though only increasing 1%, you know, what's the big deal if you go from 8% to 9%? Well, it's not from 8% to 9% when, you know, a third to a half of your income has already been consumed by the federal government. The implications of our little marginal changes are actually much greater than we might think. So I think seeing that whole picture would give us a more complete understanding of the marginal impacts and the direct impacts of our tax policy. So thank you, Representative Garofalo. This would be great.
Hey, Representative Lincheski, and then we're going to shut her down for the day. Okay. Representative Lincheski.
I'll pass.
Then we'll shut her down for the day. Good government all the time. Oh, just time out, time out. The chair lays over House File 725 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much, members, for committee today. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.